friends. This is Pastor Hillary recording this sermon on Tuesday, March 17th. I am recording this to an empty sanctuary. We have suspended our in-person worship services for the time being to prevent the spread and impact of the coronavirus. So I'm recording this and we'll be posting this online. So welcome to this week's message if you're tuning in online. What a week it's been. Things seem to have changed at lightning speed over the past week. If you asked me last week if we would have been canceling our in-person worship services and moving to virtual online worship, I wouldn't have believed it. But here we are. In response to this situation, people are suspending travel, canceling large group events, and stocking up on supplies to prepare to stay hunkered down at home for a while. Fears over the spread of the coronavirus have led to a run on basic supplies like hand sanitizer, masks, and of all things, toilet paper. That's right, toilet paper. Perhaps you noticed or saw scenes of people hoarding toilet paper, buying hundreds of rolls at a time, clearing store shelves, and even fighting other customers for those precious rolls. Now stores are limiting the number of rolls an individual can purchase at a time so as to keep the supply adequate to the demand. Now I get why people are stocking up on things like hand sanitizer and masks, but toilet paper? Toilet paper doesn't protect you from infectious disease. So why are people stocking up on toilet paper? Well, from what I've gathered, people read about how there was going to be a toilet paper shortage online and through social media, through the news. And when they went to their stores, they started to see that the shelves were clearing and there wasn't any toilet paper. And everybody seemed to be buying toilet paper. And because it seemed like something everybody should be buying it, people started buying it too. And then it became scarce. And people were afraid they wouldn't be able to get it, which drove them to buy even more of it. In other words, people didn't really need to hoard toilet paper. It wasn't going to do anything to protect them from contracting the virus. But because everybody else seemed to be doing it, people didn't want to be left out not having any. So they bought more than they really needed. And as a result, people who actually needed toilet paper couldn't get it. It's classic human self-preservation on display. We're all guilty of this from time to time. But during a crisis, this behavior can become greatly problematic. At a time when we need to be self-sacrificing and looking out for the good of others, our fears cause our natural human selfishness to kick in. And in this state, we can become a little crazy and start doing things like hoarding toilet paper. So how do we resist this natural human impulse towards self-preservation at the expense of the greater good? As Christians, Jesus gives us an example we should follow and models for us what servanthood looks like. Jesus shows us how to put our own selfish desires aside to serve others. Jesus also gives us power through the Holy Spirit to become better servants toward those around us. We are in our Lenten series, The Walk, Five Essential Practices of the Christian Life, based upon the book by Adam Hamilton. We've looked at the practices of worship and prayer and study, and today we're looking at the practice of service, which is very timely given our current cultural situation. What does it mean to serve others? How can we become better servants of others as Jesus followers? We'll explore in today's message. Service is a very important concept in the Bible. In fact, the term serve, serving, service, and servant appear over 1,000 times in the Bible. Clearly an important concept. We are called to serve God in a variety of ways, one of which we're doing right now. One of the words for service involves serving God through worship. So by participating in this virtual worship experience, you are serving God. But that's not the only dimension of biblical service. Adam Hamilton says we are meant to serve God by doing his work and his will in this world. This is a simple but straightforward truth. God's primary mode of working in the world is through people. When we perform acts of service, we are embodying God's love and justice in the world, and we're part of the ministry God uses to heal the world and help others. Jesus models for us what serving God looks like. In today's gospel reading from Matthew 20, the mother of James and John came to Jesus and wanted him to put her two sons in the top two prime positions of authority in Jesus' kingdom. She wanted to make sure that her sons ended up at the top of the pyramid, in charge over all the other disciples, right next to Jesus. When the other disciples heard this, they were indignant, perhaps because they secretly wanted these primo leadership positions for themselves. Classic human self-preservation again. However, Jesus has a different metric for leadership in his kingdom. He said to them, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and that their great ones are tyrants over them. It will not be so among you. But whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Jesus' paradigm for leadership is not lording over others, bullying or manipulating others. No, Jesus' paradigm for leadership is one of being a servant, putting others' needs above our own. Jesus' model is one of service, not self-preservation. Philippians 2, 3 through 8 says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility regard others as better than yourselves. Let each of you look not to your own interest, but to the interest of others. Let the same mind be in you that was in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness, and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." Jesus is our example of servanthood. Though it's possible we may be called upon to pay the ultimate price of servanthood and sacrifice our lives for someone else, as Jesus did for us, our expression of servanthood is likely to be done in smaller ways, in the day-to-day activities of everyday life. Sometimes acts of service can be practical, like making someone a meal, calling to say hello, or offering a word of kindness or encouragement. Adam Hamilton says, "Most often the opportunities to serve and show kindness are unplanned. They are interruptions. Part of what is necessary to serve Christ by serving others is our willingness to be interrupted." That sounds so easy to say, but it's hard to practice. We get so busy. We have so many things to do and haven't gotten done yet that we just don't have time for an unexpected interruption. We might not even notice the other person God has put in our path. How many of you can relate to this? I know I can. We're all facing a lot of interruptions right now, and no doubt these will continue. Yet Jesus gives us opportunities to serve others, often when we're least expecting it. At our recent cafe church, we explored the great commandment, the greatest commandment, in fact, to love God with all our being and to love our neighbors as ourselves. Now, love is not just a feeling about our neighbor. It is a willingness to be interrupted, inconvenienced, a willingness to take a risk, to step outside of our own comfort zone, to sacrifice our time, our preferences, to meet someone else's need. As we are more open to others' needs, as we take advantage of the opportunities God gives us to show Jesus' love to others we come across in our everyday lives, we'll grow to become more like Jesus. We'll grow to have more of Jesus' heart, more of his kindness, more of his compassion toward others, more of a desire to let go of what we have to selflessly give to others, whether it be our time, our resources, or our advocacy for another who may need it. Just like physical exercise strengthens our physical muscles, acts of service strengthen our love muscles. the way we tangibly love our neighbors as Jesus taught us to do. As we practice serving others in our community, we can become better attuned to our neighbors' needs, and we curb that natural self-preservation tendency that leads us to do things like hoarding toilet paper when we don't need to. When we practice serving others regularly, we're showing the world what it looks like to live in God's kingdom, to live in God's economy, where there is no scarcity, where there is no shortage. When we live lives of service to others, we show them what God's compassion, what God's justice, and God's kindness looks like in real life. A life of service shows others a different way to live than that of fear, of selfishness, or of greed. We show them the way of Jesus, a way that treats others as we would wish to be treated, a way that gives to others what we would wish to be given. And this is a powerful witness, especially during these troubling, uncertain times. I'm sure many of you are feeling fearful and anxious and uncertain over what is going to happen with this coronavirus situation. Many of you are probably anxious for loved ones and anxious for yourselves. You're worried about your loved one getting sick or you getting sick yourself. Perhaps you're worried about your job, how you will make arrangements to work remotely, how you'll care for your children or elderly relatives, how you'll manage if schools or businesses are closed, or if you can't work remotely, how you'll protect yourself from getting sick, particularly if you don't have health insurance or if you lose wages due to a reduction in work hours. Perhaps you're worried about how you'll manage if you have to stay home and be quarantined. These concerns are very real. It would be very easy for us to slip into self-preservation mode and worry only about taking care of ourselves and our immediate family in this crisis. But as Jesus followers, we are called to rise above our own fear and anxiety and look to how we may serve those in our community, particularly those who are most vulnerable. If there were ever a time for the church to really be the hands and feet of Jesus in our community, it is now. We're going to need to take care of each other, to take care of our neighbors, and to look to one another's needs above our own. The major act of service we're being called upon to do as a society right now is this mass social distancing effort. According to a recent article in Medium, we must move to pandemic mitigation through widespread, uncomfortable, and comprehensive social distancing. This means not only shutting down schools, work as much as possible, group gatherings, and public events, but also making daily choices to stay away from each other as much as possible to flatten the curve. Many of you have no doubt seen the graph that has gone around on the internet this week, the one with a very large sharp curve upward that shows what will happen if a large number of cases of the virus happen all at once and overwhelm the system, versus the more gradual flatter curve that will occur if people distance themselves from each other, thus slowing the virus's spread and making the situation much more manageable for our healthcare system. The idea is if we take more drastic social distancing measures up front, even though there will be a social and economic sacrifice in the short term, the long-term effects of the virus will be less severe and more lives will be preserved. According to one expert, he says our health system will not be able to cope with the projected numbers of people who will need acute care should we not muster the fortitude and will to socially distance each other starting now. Thus, the only strategies that can get us off this concerning trajectory are those that enable us to work together as a community to maintain public health by staying apart. In addition to practicing good hygiene habits like washing our hands and not touching our faces, social distancing is one of the best acts of service we can make for one another and for the greater good. This social distancing is not necessarily so that you don't get sick, but so that you don't inadvertently become a vector, a carrier of the virus to someone else who may be more greatly compromised health-wise by it than you would be. This is one of the reasons we're worshiping remotely instead of in person, to contribute as best we can to the overall effort to flatten the curve. For most of us right now, especially those who are sick or considered in a high-risk category, our best act of service might be to simply stay at home and do our part to flatten the curve. However, as we practice social distancing as a public health measure, we must still not forget the need we have to connect with one another. After all, human beings are relational beings. And so we need to pursue virtual options to ease the social isolation our social distancing measures will inevitably cause. According to a recent Vox article, it states, "Make no mistake, the rapid implementation of social distancing is necessary to flatten the coronavirus curve and prevent the current pandemic from worsening. But just as the coronavirus fallout threatens to cause an economic recession, it's also going to cause what we might call a social recession, a collapse in the social contact that is particularly hard on the populations most vulnerable to isolation and loneliness, older adults and people with disabilities or pre-existing conditions." One expert states, "To compensate for the reduction in in-person social interaction, we must ramp up our virtual communication and ensure that we are not losing touch with friends and family. Video conferencing and phone calls," he said, "are more rich than texting or emailing alone. Sadly, the hardest hit populations are often the least technologically savvy. So one expert recommends a simple way you may be able to help is just to act as tech support to the people in your life. Phone calls, emails, FaceTime, and other virtual methods of connection are going to be crucial over the next few weeks and months in order to prevent the deleterious effects of social isolation, particularly on those who are most vulnerable to it." One faith leader points out, "Social distancing is a misnomer. We should practice physical distancing, but this is the time to increase social closeness in the form of phone calls, video chats, and appropriate gatherings, small gatherings where you stay at least 6 feet apart, wash your hands, and don't physically touch. Take the time to think about those who you know in your community who may benefit from extra phone calls, FaceTime chats, virtual hangouts, and other forms of connection. Think of ways you may serve as tech support to get them connected to these virtual forms of communication so they don't miss out. Consider ways to serve those who might be more isolated during this time by reaching out virtually and easing the loneliness. This is another way we can serve one another and love our neighbors as Jesus followers during this challenging time." Friends, we don't know what is going to happen with all of this, and we don't know when it will end. Things may well get worse before they get better, but we need to remember that we're in this together, and together we serve one another and our communities, making things better for everybody. We may have a lot of anxiety about the coronavirus and its potential impact on our community, but Jesus calls us to serve one another and to love our neighbors as ourselves. We're living in trying times, politically, socially, economically, and now with this major public health crisis. Despite these challenges, God's grace abounds, and we need not live a life of fear. Instead, Jesus calls us to faith and to service. In a time of fear, uncertainty, and self-preservation, we can be the hands and feet of Jesus, sharing his love in tangible ways to those most vulnerable. A writer I follow wrote recently, "Rejoice that you live in a time when your country needs you." I would say, rejoice that you live in a time when your church needs you, or rather, your community needs you to be the church, to be the hands and feet of Jesus, showing Jesus' love in practical ways. I close with the words of the famous reformer, Martin Luther, who himself lived through the Black Plague and has some wisdom for us. He says, "I shall ask God mercifully to protect us. Then I shall fumigate, help purify the air, administer medicine and take it. I shall avoid all places and persons where my presence is not needed, in order not to become contaminated, and thus perchance infect and pollute others, and so cause their death as a result of my negligence. If God should wish to take me, he will surely find me, and I have done what he has expected of me, and so I am not responsible for either my own death or the death of others. If my neighbor needs me, however, I shall not avoid place or person, but will go freely as stated above. See, this is such a God-fearing faith, because it is neither brash nor foolhardy and does not tempt God. May God give us the grace and strength and opportunities to love and serve our neighbors during this trying time. Our communities need us now more than ever to be Jesus' hands and feet. So friends, when God calls, may we boldly say, "Here I am, Lord, send me." And may God bless this message to our hearing. Amen.